the last in this series, I'm talking to a man who has achieved a remarkable synthesis between the modern culture of the West and the most ancient culture of the East. He is what, though he wouldn't call himself one, many people would call a guru. He's the author of books like Be Here Now and Grist for the Mill. He's Baba Ram Dass. You don't really look like anybody called Ram Dass. Tell me who you were and how you got where you are.
I was born given the name Richard. My last name was Alpert. And I grew up in the United States, in Boston. Went on to study psychology, took a PhD, taught at Harvard for some years. Got involved in the early 60s in research with psychedelic chemicals, such as LSD. Researched these for 5 or 6 years. Then went to India, where I met a spiritual teacher and realized in India that they had maps for the types of things that we were thinking we were the first explorers on the earth. They already had maps about this terrain of consciousness. And at that time I was given the name Ram Dass, which means servant of God. Ram is one of the names of God and Dass means servant. And I came back from India and became somewhat of a yogic teacher, I guess. And the name Ram Dass was useful to me because every time somebody calls you servant of God, it reminds you about what your business is about, which Richard didn't really do. So even though all of the trappings of Ram Dass are now gone, the Indian clothes and the beads, and I'm not any more a Hindu than I am a Christian or a Buddhist or a Jew or a Islam.
Would you care to say then, in that context, what you are? You're not those things, or in a sense perhaps you're all of them?
I think in every one of them is living spirit, and I think I am completely hooked on living spirit and that which truth brings you to. And at the highest or most esoteric essence of each of the religions is that same truth. And I am very much attached to spirit, not particularly to religious forms.
Did you, you went to India and you met the spiritual teacher of whom you spoke. Would you say it was correct to say you had a conversion of any kind?
Well, you know, what seems like critical moments in a life, when you look back later, you see that there was a lot of preparation in your being for that. I'm sure that the first time I understood the scientific method, it was an opening for me. I'm sure the first time I took psychedelics, it was very definitely an opening for me. I'm sure the time I met the teacher, it was a very clear opening for me because I saw in him the possibilities that I had dreamed that human beings were capable of.
How far, then, do you feel that all that was in some way, somewhere, preordained for you, that there's a path that your feet have been set upon?
Well, I don't know whether the word preordained is exactly the right word. It seems to me that the entire universe of forms is lawful in its unfolding, and that it is not by chance that each event occurs. I don't know that it is determined at some distant past moment. It merely is a set of lawful interactions, and if you could stand back far enough, you could see and predict the way it would work in time and space. So I have adopted the role similar to the Tibetan Milarepa of sort of listening to the universe to hear the part I play, rather than thinking that I am so much of a choosing instrument.
Are we all on that path?
Yes. Yes, this is the evolution. I mean, the ultimate understanding that I have now is that we have taken a human birth in order to have a series of experiences which are vehicles for our awakening out of the illusion that we are only separate, exclusively separate.
Right? Separate from what?
Separate from the totality of form, or what might be called God, or the formless that lies behind form. The One, it could be called the One. And it seems to me that the journey of awakening leads one to go from thinking that the reality that you grew up with, where your parents said, settle down to reality, this is real, gives way to understanding that that's only relatively real, that there are many types of realities, not only cross-cultural, but planes of awareness as well, and that you go from the identity with your own separateness, which is true on one plane, like at this plane you're Bernard and I'm Ram Dass, then we go up another one in which we can look and we can see, at one level we can see your body and my body, that's one plane of reality. We could flip our channels, see another plane where we see your personality and mine, now we're in the psychological domain. We could flip another channel in which we could determine that your astral identity, you could be an Aries or I'm an Aries, you might be Leo, Sagittarius, or whatever, another matrix of individual difference. We flip the channel once more, and when I look into your eyes, I see another human being just like me, but in a different package, all right? And then all the individual differences become packaging. These are planes of consciousness. Mm-hmm. If I flip it once more and look into your eyes, it is myself looking at myself looking at myself. There's only one of us in drag, making believe we are the many, if you will, all right? And the complete cycle is going from the many into the one, and then coming back into the many to delight in the forms of individual difference. Not to reject the physical plane by any means, but that's the cycle of awakening, as far as I understand.
Well, what happens when we get to the channel, to use your metaphor, which, to vary it, hits the jackpot? What comes up on the machine? What are we looking for? What's the ultimate end? What's at the end of the rainbow?
Well, you see, at that point you have transcended time and space, so there is no beginning and there is no end, so the entire image is really a faulty one. You realize at that moment, all right? So that's part of it. You have transcended time and space. You have transcended any attachment to a separate identity, even though you still enjoy the separateness as you will, all right? You have become experience. You've transcended dualism, the separation between subject and object, so that at that moment you are the river or you are the tree. You are one with the universe, and it is beyond even the experience of cosmic consciousness, which is a lower trance state, actually. You've actually transcended that one. And at that point, there is no self-consciousness. You are merely part of the Tao, of the flow of things in the universe.
But if we are part of the universe, all of us, all the time, how come we have to become that thing? I mean, what's happened? You talked about us being separate from it. Why should we be separate from it?
Well, this is the question of how did it all begin?
Right,
why is there form? Why about the apple, original sin? Which
right.
metaphor do you want to use?
Was it
merely the one of us creating the many in order to come to know itself, because there was no way a one could experience itself? So it plays with dualism, because as you awaken out of dualism, you realize that the entire thing was like a dream or a dance or an illusion. Not meaning, it's not pejorative to say that. It merely means that it didn't have the solidity you thought it did. Mm-hmm. So in one answer, Buddha's answer is, it's none of your business. Meaning that the rational mind can never comprehend the system that created it. In other words, a system can't understand a system meta to it, which is merely a logical problem.
Well, the way you put it, it sounds as though you're one, your totality, your God, and these are only labels, we're agreed, I'm sure, has, so to speak, set us a task. Is that what you believe?
Well, first of all, it's not anything separate from us.
Oh.
So we have set us a task, and we could call it a game of hide and seek. We could call it, you see the predicament. If you look at the wheel of births and deaths, in which you go from the one into the many, and then awaken back into the one, and then stand back from that wheel outside of time and space, you see that there is nothing happening. There is no beginning and there's no end. It's merely, if you look at a clock, that at some point you think you are at 5:25. You think that's who you are. But actually, if you stood back, you would see that you are the Buddha, you are the first cell separating, and you are also the holy man at the last moment of enlightenment. They're all right there. All the incarnations are always present, every moment.
But then are we just going round and round and round?
Yes. nothing's happening at all, actually.
Well, that sounds a trifle pointless. But you don't clearly, look at you, you don't think that's pointless.
Well, the experience of going round has the point in it. The totality just is. God just is. God isn't going anywhere. It always was, is, and will be. And there is, in a way, it is only when you understand that it's pointless that it gets interesting. We are always clinging to what's the meaning of this?
Yes.
How important is this?
Yes.
But maybe it isn't that important. Maybe it has the exquisite beauty of being, as Hermann Hesse says in Journey to the East, Leo says, it's a beautiful dance, it's a beautiful game, an exquisite game, a play. In India it's called Leela, the play, the dance.
But how can human beings abandon that concept of meaning? I mean, that is surely the whole structure of everything we stand on. The floor will fall in if we abandon that, won't it?
But it's after the floor falls in, and after you have transcended thinking of yourself as somebody going somewhere. I mean, if I were to define what I am, I'd say I'm in training and nobody training. I'm in training to become nobody special. Which is, it's understood in the Zen image of nobody special. And then out of that, you come back into the play. You do it as Don Juan says in the Castaneda books. You live and you huff and puff as if it had tremendous meaning. You appear as if it does, but yet it doesn't.
Aren't you reducing us to meaninglessness in the sense that... Of course, we all think we're the center of the universe, if you like, and you are telling us we're not. That, I understand that. But aren't you going further than that and dissolving the whole point of us at all? I mean, this thing, you don't believe all this is an accident, I take it.
No, I think that the error is, it's the oversimplification, is taking one plane of reality and investing it with some higher value than another. On one plane of reality, it is absolutely perfect law unfolding. No other than merely the unfolding of law. No more meaning than that. Merely a set of events evolving one from the other. On another level, on this level, there is choice, there is motive, there is intent, there is goal, there is purpose. And we play on this level with the purpose, and most of us take it very seriously. And part of awakening is that you start to do it from a different level. You do it out of a delight and a playfulness, even though it's all heavy and serious, you know. There's a different quality of the way you live life.
Well, now, the question that comes up at this moment, I can't resist it, to put it in an obvious modern metaphor, can you sell soap with it? I mean, what do you do? You live in the real world, never mind about how many other worlds there are. And the planes of illusion, I understand that. But we live in this world. We cross the street looking right and left. We go buy food in the grocery store.
But Bernard, the question is how we live in the world, not whether we live in the world because we have taken incarnation here, because that's who you and I happen to be on this level of our evolution, that we end up on this plane together at this moment, knowing each other, at least on this plane.
Right.
But as Christ points out, one lives in the world but not of the world. And you slowly realize that that this is a form that's manifesting, and you dance with it. You wear it like your clothing. You honor it, you take care of it, you keep it clean and neat, and you find out how it harmoniously expresses itself.
But we have, or what do we have, you tell me, responsibilities to one another, very important ones too. Do we not have our fellow men, our fellow creatures?
Absolutely. And as you listen to hear why you have been incarnated and what function you have within the incarnation, see, this Bernard has a function. You as a cosmic, as God, is at play, as at rest, eternally. There's a part of you that is at rest, and then there is this form that has purpose and function. And you are constantly listening to hear what your function is. And the quieter you become, the more you hear your function is that of service, of relieving the suffering that exists, because you experience at one level of consciousness your identity with all other beings. See, behind, as we went through the changing of the channels, there is a place where you and I are one. And if you're suffering, I'm suffering. You see, ultimately. And there's where social responsibility comes in, finally.